Welcome back, everyone. This is Eric Ellison with the Digital Education Podcast, where I get to have conversations, usually in the education world, but oftentimes with because of my interest with people who are in the creative arts or, you know, innovation or leadership. And today I'm with John Waller, who founded Uncage the Soul Productions in 2004. And on his website, it says he sampled a career variety pack that included being an adventure guide, dumping smoke on a hotshot crew, and a year as a high school science teacher. Might ask him about that later. He currently lives along the edge of the impassable wilderness in Portland, directing, producing, and editing adventure documentaries, commercial shorts, and cause-related campaigns. And it's interesting in the bio, like there's a lot of different pieces there, but John, Uncage the Soul, amazing name, amazing kind of like representation of my experience with you when we were in Iceland. But tell me, how did, in 2004, how did you kind of make this transition and come up with this name that reflects not only the work that you wanted to do, but then also the person that you are?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on and thanks for the conversation. It's fun to reflect back on how this all came to be, because it feels like a long time ago now. But when I got out of college, I graduated college a little more confused about what I wanted to do in life than when I started. And so I decided to take off and go backpacking around Europe. And I got a one-way ticket and an unlimited URL pass, and I started traveling. And I initially went over with a couple friends, but after a while we broke up and went our own ways. And it was like this first opportunity in my life to really travel solo and in a foreign country. And I just had this sense of curiosity and wonder and exhilaration and fear and all of the things, like very visceral. And in that experience, as I was just meandering around the different countries in Europe, and this was right around 99. And so I was occasionally able to get out these sporadic emails, and I would write these big kind of updates on what I'd seen and where I'd been and done. And I'd send them out to friends and family. And I'd always end the email with the tag Uncage the Soul, because it felt like that's what I was doing in my own process, traveling and meeting people. And so I don't know, wrote 15 of these or so over the course of my travels, and every one of them was ended with Uncage the Soul. So fast forward a number of years later, I had been teaching, and I decided to leave teaching and start a video production company and needed a name. And Uncage the Soul seemed to be the right name for the kind of work that I was wanting to make, you know, something that felt exhilarating, something that had a sense of wonder to it, something that felt free and wild in a way. So that's the origin of that name.
So, John, you know, in you and I, it was an amazing experience that I had with, you know, the MMRF and moving mountains for myeloma, and then being in Iceland with you as you're, you know, videotaping and interviewing and taking pictures and flying drones. But then while we're just trying to survive on the trail, you're all over the place. You're in front of us, behind us, above us. How do you, in this creative pursuit of telling stories and bringing in, I love the kind of the mission statement that you have, where you say our mission is to capture the wonder that is around us and compel the wonder that is within us. How do you, as a person that is, you know, in some ways doing the documentary, but also in many ways crafting that story of wonder, how do you enter into, but then also at the same time, you know, respect like the people that you're telling the story about, or for, or with?
Yeah. It's a complicated dance, it seems. The hardest part of our work is anticipating what's going to happen before it happens and trying to be in the right place at the right time with the right equipment. I mean, that's for us, that's really everything. And so, you know, as we're moving through Iceland, hiking, my brain is always like 15 minutes to an hour ahead, you know, where what's coming up? What are we going to see? What are some circumstances where we may see within the participants a sense of success or a sense of struggle or a sense of fear or a sense of teamwork, and just anticipating and predicting when those things are going to happen so that we're there with the camera. Especially on our trip, there is a sensitivity to the topic and to the lives of the people that we're with. And it's really feeling that out. And I think, even before we ever start filming, just building a sense of rapport and trust with the people that we're hiking with so that people feel comfortable with their story in our hands. And once that happens, I think, you know, the walls fall away, and there's just a little more ease with that, with people hiking, with us being around with cameras, and with us feeling confident enough to go up to you and ask you questions about what's going on in your mind. What are you thinking? How are you feeling? So the trust component of it is really, really important. And we feel like now, this being our 12th moving mountains trip over 4 years, that, you know, we've established a pretty good rapport and dynamic and sense of credibility, I would say, which makes it a lot easier too.
So from a creative standpoint, because it's interesting, because you know getting to know you on that trip and then hearing about the different work that you do, I'm really interested in two parts of the creativity in some ways. One is you know, done 12 of these trips, done, you know, multiples of these trips to Iceland, you know, there's almost the predictive nature of what you kind of expect to come. Kind of a twofold question. One is, like, how does it stay fresh so that you can tell the story anew rather than it just kind of being, in some ways, I think where we get into sometimes stuck with our own creativity is we just kind of refresh the story. Maybe I'll just ask that and then ask the second question after you answer.
Yeah. Well, you're spot on about that. And that's a big struggle, especially on a trip like this that we've done before with really similar circumstances and group dynamics. And I wouldn't say that we always get it right. We're always kind of like trying to push against those walls that are our own mind, that are kind of keeping us confined to a certain formula. But there's also external expectations and boundaries that keep us in that space too. And they're always trying to explore what the edge of that space is, between, you know, what is we know is going to work and what our clients want, and what our own creative brains are sort of yearning for and to see something new. And it's hard. Like, I know that on this Iceland trip, I was constantly reminding myself to seek out different shots than ones that I knew were going to be really good because I had gotten them last year, you know. And there's this kind of pull, this gravitational pull towards what you know is going to work because it's predictable and easy. And I've always found myself trying to, like, push that away and remind myself, like, don't go for what's predictable and easy and that you know is going to work. Seek out something that is, uncage your soul and seek out a new perspective. And so that was an ongoing internal struggle for me, I would say, in that creative process. Because it's, after a while, it gets kind of easy to do what you've done before and what you know works. And that isn't necessarily in the spirit of our company and our work.
So kind of that second part of them, even the creativity, is very much of your life and your experience, and then even just watching some of the videos on your website, and then just, you know, even spending that time with you and Iceland, is that the nature, the surroundings, the outdoors, it's very much of a part of the story, not an add-on to the story. It is very much of like, this is the inclusion or the connectivity between whether it's the journey or the documentary or, you know, whatever it might be, whether that's Iceland or whether that's, you know, Oregon or whether that's some of the other places that you've been. How do you kind of integrate, or how have you found ways in a creative way? Because I find it fascinating when you're able to take not just that as the backdrop, but that as part of, you know, as a player in the story itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you think of the landscape as a character. And I really, we've done that in other projects. I really enjoy thinking about the landscape as not necessarily as an animate character, like a human character, but as having a voice and a characteristic and a personality itself. It's like you feel that in the weather all the time, where you can be in a place, and if it's sunny, you have a very different relationship with that place than if the clouds are dark and moody and maybe you hear some thunder in the background. There's this sense there's like an ominous feel to it. There's a sense of seriousness, you know. And it's same place, same. It's just sort of the weather alone can completely change the character and your experience with a place. So you can't, like, it's just impossible for that landscape and that weather to not play a big role in what your experience is as moving through that landscape. So, you know, I could just think of like examples a couple years ago when we were on Kilimanjaro. One of the hardest days of that trip was also accompanied by this torrential rainstorm. And it was almost perfect in a way, right? Because you had people struggling up really high altitude. It was a really long hike. People were exhausted. And then on top of it, you had this torrential rainstorm. And it was almost perfect because that rainstorm sort of embodied the struggle that and the inner struggle and challenge that people were going through in the first place. So I really love to incorporate that landscape, that weather element into our work with storytelling with people, because it's such an important part of it.
So, John, maybe, you know, two more questions, you know, as I think about this, and there was something that you said on the trip that I think is echoed a little bit on your website where, you know, you talk about making this transition in life into this video production world at the perfect time. You know, in that, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, in some ways, you know, we talked about anybody can kind of create videos. Anybody can kind of take pictures. Anybody, you know, in this digital world can share things. But there's a craft. And I think you even used that term multiple times when we were talking. You know, that there's a craft to the work that you do. You know, there's the creativity side of things, but then how do you as a professional in this world, like, work on this craft so that then your skill set and your abilities continue just to grow to be able to enhance, you know, your creativity and what you want to share and produce, you know, with and for people?
Yeah. Yeah, I think about that a lot. I think about being relevant in an industry, a profession that the analogy that I have is it's like the technology treadmill, and you're on it and you're running, and the treadmill just keeps going faster, and you're having to run faster. And at a certain point, like, that's not sustainable. Like, you either tweak something on the treadmill or you fall off the back end. And I, um, oftentimes creatively and technically I'm feeling like I'm on that treadmill that's moving faster and faster. And it's pretty exhausting sometimes. So I often think in terms of, you know, as I look around me at what other people are doing, I'm trying to make conscious efforts to do something else. So as I see a trend moving in a certain direction, I may look the other way and be like, well, what's over there? As opposed to trying to chase the newest technique or the newest creative technique or the newest piece of equipment, I'm trying to look for a totally new trail myself. One that doesn't require me racing with everyone else that's in this profession. So I'm just kind of always looking around to seeing where those empty spaces are. And honestly, that's like the physical manifestation of that is like, I love going out in wilderness. I love hiking off trail. I love exploring places that I haven't been before, where maybe I've intentionally not looked at a map of a place because I want to be surprised. I don't necessarily want to know what's right around the next corner or what I'm ultimately going to arrive at. I want to maintain that sense of curiosity and surprise. And I think maybe I apply that same philosophy to my work, where I'm actively trying to explore new spaces, explore off trail, and intentionally like maintaining my own sense of enthusiasm and wonder about possibilities, creatively or technically. But it's hard, and definitely the longer that I've done this, the more maybe exhausting it becomes to try to hold that space.
Well, that, I mean, it's really interesting because so much of this trip for Iceland for me was, you know, was part of that for me personally, was pushing those boundaries of what I'm comfortable within, even mm-hmm. for a short period of time. And there is this place, it's like, you know, for me, it was like, why don't I do more of this? This is incredible in a world that's connected and busy. And just, we get into, I mean, I'm getting to a certain age too, where the routines of life kick in that just kind of become overly predictable. And there is that challenge to just, and the blessing of the trip, and even the way that you filmed things or even took time with me as a participant on that journey, is you stopped and had me look at my surroundings. You had me stop and explain what I'm feeling or what I'm seeing. And how, you know, when you're on the other side of that and telling a story, like, what would you tell people, or how do you even go to that place where it's like, here's what I've learned in my life, or even in my creative journey, to even find the spaces or the places where I can create that reflection or that depth of, you know, contemplation that allows me to take kind of some of these next steps to go off trail in this direction or off trail in that direction.
Yeah, we live in a pretty distracted world, don't we? I mean, there's so many things coming at us from a lot of directions. And there's so many like little addictions that we have. By we, I mean, just culturally, society, you know, our phones, our connection to email or text or smartphones, you know, our maybe over busy lives create a lot of things that distract us from being in that moment, where you can be reflective and you can just pause and look around and absorb. So there's a lot of things in life that pull us away from that. So, I mean, one of our jobs is to, in a lot of projects, like the interview, that conversation, which becomes the narrative for the film, is so important. And so the environment in which we're doing that interview kind of becomes super critical. So you know, it's pulling you away from the group so that there's not a lot of people that are paying attention to what you're saying. So you can be a little bit more open and maybe less reserved about or less self-conscious about what you're maybe going to say. But it's also, you know, sort of removing all those distractions that keep us from paying attention and creating that sense of space and quiet to be reflective. And that's such a huge, huge part of our work in that narrative sense. And just in life, you know, if like you're going to have a deep conversation with somebody, like having it at a noisy bar probably isn't the best place. You know, maybe you're going to go out to the park and you're going to sit on the grass and you're going to have that conversation in that quieter, more expansive space, you know. And the chances are that the conversation may get a lot deeper and more rich than if you are, you know, standing around at a happy hour or a busy party.
Yeah, it's so amazing to me, like just even prepping for this Iceland trip, you know, I, instead of going to the coffee shop or to the restaurant to meet with people, I invited them on the practice hikes with me. And, you know, the practice hikes that were, they knew they were supporting me in this, but then they were also walking this journey with me and getting me ready, but then also us in conversation when we could be, or other times for me just saying, hey, I can't talk right now. I got to focus. But there is a depth that you can go that, you know, when you're not distracted by the world around you or the busyness of life, and then just being outdoors where you can gather that peacefulness or that experience in. Let me ask just one, it's more of advice, right? You know, and most of the people that listen to this podcast are educators, people looking to do things better, new, differently. I think even for me, it's just an avenue that helps prompt me as an educator to think different. If you go back to that year that you were a science teacher and all that you've learned in these last number of years, making this transition to the work that you're doing now, you know, what would be your piece of advice to that young teacher or to even that teacher that says, hey, you know what, here's what I've learned that I wish I would have known for the classroom or the school or that life experience?
Yeah. Well, the teachers that I most admired, both as a student and as a peer, were the ones that really dismantled the wall between inside and outside. And by that, I mean the teachers that really actively worked to bring the world into the classroom and that worked really hard to bring the classroom out to the world. Right? Dismantling the doors and the walls and the windows of the classroom itself. And though that's a lot of work as a teacher, I mean, a teacher is already overloaded with many responsibilities. And so that effort is even more work, I think. But the outcome is, I think, for the students and the teacher is it continues to kind of permeate the energy and the enthusiasm for learning and teaching, where at least for myself, I kind of ended up feeling suffocated in the classroom. And I was always yearning to be out more in the world. And I just never took the energy or the initiative to do that as a teacher myself. And maybe because it was I was a first year teacher and I didn't know, maybe, I mean, there's a lot of conditions, but it was also, I kind of only was there 75% as a person. And I think the kids can sense that. And there were a lot of times where I would come into the classroom and the kids would come into the classroom. And we'd all kind of look at each other and be like, sort of unconsciously, like knowing that none of us really wanted to be there. And that wasn't fair to me. It wasn't fair to the kids. And so I felt like for myself, if I was to become an exceptional teacher, it was really about making that effort to expand our classroom way outside of the classroom itself.
John, that's, I mean, it makes sense when you meet you, and that's really, I mean, it's really encouraging words and for us to finish on. So I really appreciate you, John. I appreciate your work. I really enjoyed the opportunity I had to watch you work and then to get to meet you in that process. And thank you for taking this time with me.
Yeah, thank you, Eric. I really appreciate the conversation.